from the CYC podcast, Discussions of Child and Youth Care, episode number 130. I'm Wolfgang Vachon. Today, I'm continuing my conversations with some of the creators of the audio podcast Transitioning Home. Originally, I was thinking about mixing the different conversations into a single episode, but we've since decided to separate them and then post them each week as we do them. And today will be our second one. You can find out more about the project Transitioning Home and listen to all the episodes at transhome.org. That is TRANSHOME.org, or through the Facebook page called Transitioning Home Podcast. My guest today is James Graham, one of the creators of the project and an actor also in Transitioning Home. James is also an incredible visual artist and created the image that you see on our website and our Facebook page. That's worth the visit, even if you don't, for whatever reason. I don't know why you wouldn't listen to the episode, but even on this episode, just go to check out his art. It's incredible. Hi, James. Thanks for joining me today.
Hi. Thank you so much for having me.
Oh, I'm excited to talk with you. Let me start by asking you, can you introduce yourself to us?
Yeah, absolutely. So I'm 22 years old. I'm an artist, writer, and activist living in Toronto. And I make a webcomic called Bad Bad Things. And aside from that, I've been getting into making jam. And yeah, that's mostly what I've been up to.
That's awesome. What kind of jam are you making this season?
I've been going for like a blackberry lemon thing. It's nice. Like good. It's good. Yeah.
I bet. When I'm back to Toronto, I'm gonna hit you up for one of those. I like
Absolutely.
My jam. Tell me about Bad Bad Thing.
So it's been going on for a couple years now. It's a graphic novel that I update every 2 weeks. It's about marginalized youth as well, but sort of in a dystopian fantasy setting where there's a four young people trying to survive in a desert hellscape and start a revolution. So that's the rough plot that's going on there.
How's the revolution going?
Still in the works. In the works. They've got a way to go.
Yeah. I'm a big fan of the dystopia and utopia genre. It's one of my favorites, actually. So I encourage people to check it out. I haven't read all the issues, but I've dipped in and out, and it's well worth the visit for sure. So I asked Jordan this last week, and I'm interested in hearing your answer as well. What would you say that Transitioning Home is about?
Well, I would say, you know, the on paper description is that Transitioning Home is about the youth shelter system. But I think more specifically, it's about the sort of complex set of circumstances that can lead young people into that system to begin with. And then the moments of solidarity and connection that come between those young people in that system, even under those like unfair and harsh conditions.
Indeed, that's beautiful. I mean, I think I might change the website right up. Your character, Milan, in episode 4 is really trying to navigate a lot of those complex circumstances that you mentioned. Love, coming out as gay, safety, being a trans feminine person, all while trying to support your girlfriend who was kicked out of her house for being queer. So a particular focus of that episode has to do with families. What are some of the complex situations, particularly with queer and trans folks, that exist in families that sometimes push people out of their homes?
Yeah, I think it's a specific dynamic there with being queer, being trans, that is kind of exclusive to those experiences that you don't find in sort of other ways of being marginalized, because you can grow up your whole life and have this family connection, and whatever your other circumstances are, if you're poor, if you're racialized, you have at least that small group of people who can support you through that. But then, you know, you hit this point where you realize something about yourself, and then suddenly you're entirely on your own for a lot of people. And I think that's, it's a difficult and sort of specific aspect of that experience that not a lot of other things have. So I think that was definitely a big part of that for me. And I think it's a big part of the experience for my character as well.
What do you think your character Milan would have wanted from her dad?
You know, I think one of the biggest things for young people when they're figuring themselves out in basically any capacity is just an understanding, even if it is sort of a strange way of putting it, but I guess understanding, even if you don't understand, you know, sort of a license to explore yourself, to grow up and to experiment and figure out who you are as a young person without judgment and without these sort of like immediate demands. You know, so are you gay now? Okay. So what are you doing? Like, you know, that sort of thing. And I think one of the biggest things for young people in general, and I think one of the things that would have really helped my characters, yeah, just that space and the understanding that even if you as a parent don't understand what exactly I'm doing or what exactly I'm going for, just, you know, I got it covered and I'm figuring myself out and it's all going to be okay.
Nice. I love that phrase, understanding even if you don't understand. And I think it applies to so many variations. So, you know, me as someone who's supporting a young person, even if I don't get it, supporting them, trying to understand them, even if they don't understand, trying to understand that they don't understand and be understanding in that lack of understanding. Like there's so many lovely spaces for opening and for relationship in that. It's nice. In the write-up we have on the website, we say some of the folks involved in the project chose not to go into the shelter system. So switching now from your character to James, the actor, creator, artist, activist, you were one of those people yourself who chose not to go into a shelter, who chose to stay outside of the shelter system. Can you tell us why, as a trans guy, you didn't feel comfortable or didn't want to go into the shelter system?
Yeah. So like a lot of trans people, unfortunately, I became homeless shortly after I came out. And at the time, I didn't really know what to do with myself. So I didn't think that a shelter really would either. I wasn't really comfortable going into a women's shelter, but I also wasn't comfortable going into a men's shelter, which was sort of an experience that I'd had my whole life, just sort of not really feeling comfortable in either of those categories or spaces. But then when I was in this sort of immediate danger situation, it was still the same thing. And I didn't really think that there was space for me in the way that the shelter system was laid out. And I was also really worried that I was going to be turned away because my case was complex, which is something that I had happen up until that point when I tried to speak to social workers or counselors. I think there was a social worker at my high school who I was talking to shortly before I ended up actually becoming homeless. And I tried to talk to her about my circumstances, what was going on with me at home. And she essentially told me that the whole thing was kind of above her pay grade because there was so much going on because of who I was. So I, at that time, I think I was just trying to keep my stuff together. And I thought it would be really hard for me to go to somewhere like a shelter and find out that I wasn't welcome there. And I think also, you know, I had a lot of friends who had already been involved in the shelter system. And I hadn't heard anything good about it, really, unfortunately. I had a specific memory of one of my friends who'd been in and out of a couple shelters. And she called me and she had just become homeless again. Her current living situation had fallen through in a bad way. And she was scared. She was alone. I think she was calling me from a park and her phone was dying. And, you know, she was having a really rough time, but it was when I brought up the possibility of her going to a shelter that she got really, really upset. And she just kept saying, no, no shelters, no shelters. I won't do it. Not again. And I don't, you know, at the time, I don't think I even knew the specific details of the hard experiences that she had had at the shelters she had been to. But I think just that was enough, just that she was already so upset, and just bringing it up made everything worse, you know. And I had heard specifics from other people of the things that they had experienced in shelters, and I thought that I was better off on my own, I guess. Which I guess is sad.
Very sad, to put it mildly. What would have been a shelter space you would want to go to, or would have felt comfortable going into?
You know, it's interesting because I think the hypothetical shelter system that I would have felt comfortable going into is something that is really possible because, you know, I've been involved in various social programs and stuff for a long time. And I know I'd been involved in social programs, community outreach stuff before I ended up being homeless. And I had really positive experiences with that, you know, like community centers or like art programs for marginalized youth, stuff like that. I've been really involved in stuff like that. And I really, really liked it. I've felt a sense of community there. I, you know, met people. I had really good experiences. But for some reason, I feel like there's this really big gap in between programs like that and then actual immediate housing supports or crisis supports, which can be so neglected. But yeah, overall, I think just somewhere where I felt like the shelter was designed with someone like me in mind, where I wouldn't be some sort of weird exception, somewhere where I didn't have to worry about the risk of violence. And yeah, just somewhere where I felt like I could really feel safe. Also, I'm a very private person, so I think somewhere where I felt like I could have time alone was a big thing. And I know, you know, sleeping in like a park, you don't necessarily have privacy, but you're not in close quarters with other people all the time, which was what I had heard about the shelter experience was a big problem for a lot of people, was that they just couldn't find any space or time to be alone, couldn't find any privacy. And I knew that that was something that would make stuff really hard for me, because I really need my time and my space to just sort of be alone for my mental health. So I think I was happier being somewhere where I could be alone, even if it wasn't safe. Just so I could have some time to myself.
Absolutely. Yeah. This idea of safety is a curious one. what safety means, right? How we take care of ourselves, when we feel safe, how we feel safe. So, any thought, this is one of these sort of ridiculously large questions, any thoughts for folks who are listening, who ways to support, you know, trans folks, young trans folks coming to them, whether they read as trans or not, whether they identify as trans or not?
Yeah, I think, again, with the sort of giving them room to grow and explore themselves, because, you know, trans young people are young people fundamentally, and there's so much that you learn about yourself as you grow up. And I think there's a lot of pressure on trans young people to already know exactly who they are. You know, we see all these stories about, you know, this 12-year-old just came out as trans and, you know, she knows exactly who she is. And that's great. But I think that that narrative is celebrated over, you know, people just going through the process of growing up the same way that anyone else does. And I think a lot of people have to grow up faster than they should. And I think that's true about trans young people a lot of the time. So yeah, just giving them the space to figure out who they are and make mistakes and try stuff that doesn't work until they feel comfortable in their own skin. I think that's a big thing. And I think encouraging people to find a sense of community is a big thing as well. Like, I know I didn't really feel confident in who I was until I met other people who were like me. So if there's any way that you can encourage the people you're trying to support, you meet other trans people, meet other people with similar experiences. I know that's something that's a lot easier if you're in a big city, right? There's support groups, there's stuff like that. But however that ends up manifesting for that particular person, just finding a community or support structures, I think that's something that's really important.
Absolutely. Well said. In the creation of the podcast, we had a lot of conversations about casting, and we made a decision to only cast trans actors as trans characters. Why do you think that choice was important?
I think it's important in a lot of different ways, and that's something I think we've been seeing a lot of discussion about recently in sort of the mainstream, with actors being cast to play characters that they really shouldn't have been cast to play. I think one of the most obvious things is just realism, because let's say you cast like a cisgendered woman to play a trans man. It's already kind of, you know, it's iffy from the perspective that it's like, okay, well, you know, you obviously aren't really taking trans stuff as seriously as you should. But also, you know, the way that a lot of trans men look is different from the way that cis women look. And I think just getting that level of realism in media is a big thing for people seeing themselves and seeing people who actually look like them or actually talk like them or actually, you know, are acting out what is sort of at least kind of close to their reality. You know, I think that's a big thing for people, having that mirror I think a big thing for people sort of psychologically, just in general with media, people seeing themselves and being able to sort of shape their identity around that, even if we don't think about it that way. And I think another thing is just, you know, economics, frankly, because if you look at trans populations, a lot of trans people are doing very poorly financially. A lot of people can't afford to support themselves. I don't know the specifics, but, you know, trans people live in poverty at a much higher rate than the majority of the population. So the idea of giving these positions, which are, you know, you get exposure and you actually, you know, you get paid to act in things, right? So when you have this vulnerable population where a lot of people are really struggling just to get by, and you have this position that, you know, could go to them or could go to someone else, just from the concrete perspective of, you know, materially supporting that community, that those are jobs that trans people need. And I think, you know, when you're talking about why it's important to cast trans actors in things, I think looking at the why not, like why it's not already happening, is important too. And I think a lot of that comes down to the fact that people are scared to hire trans actors almost. I think people are uncomfortable. And I think that comes down to just the fact that people are uncomfortable with trans people, which is something that needs to change. And I think making people sort of face the facts. And if, you know, if you're going to make a story about trans people, you need to bring in actual trans people to work on it, right? That's good both for those people actually getting comfortable with the people they're writing a story about, and those people actually having a hand in the stories that are being told about them, right? And being able to say if it's realistic or not, or if it's sensitive or not. So I think all of that's important. There's a lot of factors, but if you look at just the media that's already come out, media about trans people that involves trans people is often much, much better. So
yeah, it's really striking how different the narratives are, depending on who creates them and who's performing them. It's quite remarkable to me. As we move to a close, anything else you wanted to say about transitioning home or the topics that we've been discussing?
I was just going to follow up on that, on the difference between media about trans people that involves trans people in its creation and media that doesn't. I think it's actually really similar to the difference between media about like homeless young people that has involved people who've had those experiences and media that hasn't, right? And that's the difference we see with transitioning home itself. But I think one of the primary differences is when media is made from this sort of outsider looking in perspective, I feel like a lot of the time it's unintentionally very disempowering. Mm. It can be sort of condescending, and oftentimes you see, even with like well-intentioned media about, you know, about young people, about poor people, about addicts, about trans people, whatever, if it's well-intentioned, oftentimes the intent is for these people in these positions of relative privilege to share these narratives with other people in positions of relative privilege and go, you know, oh, look how hard it is for these people. Look how much they're struggling, in hope that, you know, those people, that audience will become more sensitive to those issues or will help out. But I think media that's actually made with people who have these direct lived experiences is often also made for an audience of people with those lived experiences to some extent, not entirely, but you know, it's for everyone. But I think it can be more empowering because how do I put this? I think the media that gets made by people with those lived experiences often tells other people with those experiences that, you know, it's not the end of the road for them, and that they have options, and that they have power, and that they have autonomy. And that there are people like them who are struggling like them, and that, you know, there's a shared experience all of us have, and sort of a, yeah, like we were talking about earlier, sort of a sense of solidarity. And I think, I know I come away from media like that feeling a lot better and feeling like there's something that I can actually do to change things instead of just feeling like, wow, you know, everything really does suck. I feel like that's how a lot of those, the sort of tragedy porn ends, where it's, you know, everything is really horrible for these sad, sad people. Thanks. And that's just sort of it. That's the note all of it ends on, because it's meant to create sort of a sense of pity, but not actually create change. And I think when people expose themselves to media like that over and over again, especially if you are someone who's from those communities, it can make you feel really powerless, and it can make you feel like, you know, this is the only thing you can ever hope for. This is just how things are. And that's not the intent, but I think that is sort of the effect it has. So I think the larger power of having people with these lived experiences involved in the creation of media like this is that when we get to tell our stories, we get to tell them in a way that proves to people that there is something that we can do and that change is possible. And I think that's one of the most powerful things about art in general, and about art made by, you know, people coming from marginalized backgrounds specifically.
Let me return to one of those early questions. How's the revolution coming along, James?
I'm working on it. Yes.
I'm excited to be part of your revolution, James. It's awesome. Well said. That was, we create models of what can be by making art and making what is this idea of futurity through art. Absolutely. Absolutely. So as we close, Art, what's on your horizon? What creative projects do you have coming up?
All right. Well, I'm actually going to school in September for the first time in a very long time, which is sort of, I guess, a long-term creative project in figuring out what the how I'm going to do once I have a degree. And
absolutely, that's so awesome.
Take it seriously.
Way to go.
I'm very excited for that. And yes. I'm working on a graphic novel with my partner, which I'm very excited about. It's called Devil's Territory, and it's a gay romance horror comic. I think the gay horror genre needs to be expanded personally.
Yeah, it's really, it's far too small. I absolutely agree with you on that one.
It's about two indigenous men who return to the town they grew up in to escape the consequences of their misspent lives, only with the sort of caveat that the hometown is now a government containment zone. So
it's kind of like a documentary then.
Yeah.
Yeah. Tragically so.
Yeah.
Nice. That's awesome. And
yeah,
I really hope that you and I can work together again on some
fun, I would love that.
Creative things at some point in time. James, thank you so much for having this conversation with me today. I'm leaving it expired and inspired. Not expired. I'm not expired. I hope other things have expired, but not me. I'm hoping some of the things we're fighting have expired. But I'm leaving it inspired and motivated, and I kept getting these little tingly things down my spine as you were talking. So thank you so much. Thank you for being part of Transitioning Home, for all your work on it, for doing this interview today, and for being an artist, an activist, and an amazing person.
Thank you so much for having me here. It was an absolute pleasure to work on this project with you and everyone else. And I'm really proud of what we made. So
me too.
Thank you again.
Check it out, people. All right. Bye, James.
Bye.
This concludes this month's episode of CYC Podcast. Tune in next time for more discussions on child and youth care. Subscribe to us on iTunes or Stitcher. Visit us on our website at cycpodcast.org. Follow us on Facebook at facebook.com/cycpodcast.